All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to E-Commerce AI, The Revenue Revolution. Today, we're here with Jim Voss, a dynamic technology executive with over two decades of experience in engineering leadership and hands-on software development. He has successfully led global teams and driven major improvements in system uptime, cost efficiency, technical compliance, and he has even led some teams here at Bridgeline. Jim brings a wealth of experience in creating practical solutions across different industries and also just so happens to be great friends with our CEO, Dr. Ari Khan and John Murcott, who will also be joining today's episode. So without waiting any longer, I'm going to let you guys take it away.
Thanks, Kristen. Jim!
All right. Thanks for coming by today.
Hey, this is great.
Jim. Hey, it's great to see you guys. Thanks for having me. John, I don't know if you're aware of the genesis of our inviting me to be on the podcast, but we were catching up a few weeks ago and talking about an article I had written on LinkedIn regarding the short-term future of people in software development with the advent of AI. Okay. And I'd done some thought experiments and a lot of reading on AI, and one of the paths I went down was, you know, trying to understand how AI is currently writing software and writing code. And, you know, as we know, LLMs, large language models, are basically just using statistics and probability to guess at an answer to a prompt.
Yeah.
And, but the ones that are writing code are trained on code written by people.
Yeah.
So they're high-level languages. Their frameworks, their cloud services, all these tools, because people, to write large-scale software, people just can't hold all that information and all those connections and everything together in their heads. So we invented these abstractions to assist with that. But, you know, Java or any other compiled language, even interpreted languages, will be boiled down to bytecode and eventually machine code, which is more efficient for the machine to actually run. And I thought it would be interesting to think about having LLMs trained on lower level code and sort of speculating in the future that AI may be writing code that we can't understand because it's trained on bytecode and it's not using high level language, it's not using frameworks, it's not using all these abstractions that we created for people because it doesn't need to. The problem then becomes, we won't be able to understand the source code by looking at it.
Right.
And the role of QA then, I don't know if it would be QA or something adjacent to QA, it would be testing to make sure the software produced does what you want it to do and doesn't do what you don't want it to do. Because it's essentially a black box at that point.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing because so much of, in my past life as a CTO and VP of engineering, I always focused on maintainability, and yes, everyone wanted to produce efficient code and all this kind of stuff, but if the guy next to you can't understand it, and we put a lot of energy into abstractions and embraced objects and things like this, and it's true, now all of a sudden, you could train an LLM on the underlying bytecode or whatever, and you also have optimizers inside of your compiler that are going to inline certain chunks of code and unroll loops and unroll recursions and things like that, that the LLM will end up learning these patterns of what the optimizer did, which may or may not be the best patterns all the time. It's just what the optimizer produced, that a human eventually produced, and you would end up with similar patterns starting to show up in this unreadable, admittedly very unreadable, code, and that's a whole other sort of...
But imagine feeding back performance test data into that so that it learns which are the right optimizations.
Yeah.
You know, if you have, let's say, an ERP written in assembler, there's no way people are going to be able to understand that whole thing, even small parts of it.
It's right.
Just not within our capacity. But, you know, a lot of my reading about sort of the new projects with AI while I was, you know, following down this train of thought, I also uncovered a lot of new, you know, AI software packages, which are largely just wrappers around LLMs, which are, you know, solutions in search of problems. I didn't see a lot of practicality. And, you know, those things are important for innovation. And, you know, it, to me, that can be useful, but what I'm interested in now short term is actual real world beneficial applications of AI. And Ari and I were talking about what you guys are doing with Hawk Search, you know, and I was interested to see what the latest is because I haven't talked to you in a few months about it. So, you know, I'd be interested to see what you guys are working on with AI.
Yeah. Totally. It's moving fast, and you're going to see in just the last few months a lot of new capabilities. But just to push on use cases before we get started and break out the software itself, absolutely the case that even before all this stuff with AI happened, you have to be market-driven and have real demand. You start building in a vacuum. You might get lucky and come up with a unicorn, but chances are you're going to miss the market. So listening to your customers, listening to the sales that you lose in addition to the ones that you win is absolutely critical. And a lot of our customers are driving the features that we've been adding into Hawk Search. We did a contest internally where every single person in the company, receptionist to the VP of products, all had to create a use case and do a demo with Hawk Search so that we could see it from all those different angles, and that fed into a lot of what John's been building.
Yeah, I'll add just a quick historical perspective here, and then we'll jump in. So this is what it reminds me of when you were talking before, Jim. So I think, Kristen, you covered this, but if not, we were all early people at Fatwire. So that was an original web content management tool. So how do non-technical people create content that's going to be on the web? A process that used to be very technical. You need a developer, or a webmaster, etc. But in the beginning, and I'm sure you remember this, Jim, if you wanted to create the content for your page, like an article, that was always kind of the classic starting point, but you wanted bullets or bold or whatever, you had to know HTML. Right. And you could kind of put that into the little text area, and then later a WYSIWYG.
Right.
What
and
you see is what you get.
Never worked really well.
But that was always the problem. So it's like, woohoo, I don't need to know HTML anymore. And then guess what? It's like, well, the WYSIWYG tool did something weird, and even if you looked at the source, if you weren't like hands-on with HTML, you'd be like, what the heck is going on here? Like, why is
this
wrong?
Your software doesn't work because the formatting's messed up. You would get, yeah.
Right, exactly. So the point is, people got a little bit away from understanding, like, how does that HTML work? Because of this wonderful WYSIWYG tool. Now, your point is, the WYSIWYG tool has been replaced with, you know, these various code support platforms, and there's a problem, and I don't know how to get to the bottom of it. There's another aspect, too, and maybe before I jump into this, I'd be curious, Jim, what your thoughts are here. And it was so funny because this was a specific use case for me. When you get into Gen AI and prompts and that kind of aspect, it was funny because we were working on a kind of an aspect of this where, you know, we were using the LLM to answer some questions like, look at all of this data in an input feed and then make a suggestion or write a summary or whatever it was. And there was one more piece of information that I wanted to include in the prompt. And I even, believe it or not, asked the engineer to say, like, how do I pass in one more variable? I have another variable I want to pass in. And the person was like, what are you talking about? Just add another sentence to the prompt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, the issue here is when you start to get into Gen AI, you want to hand it off to these non-technical people. Sometimes they call them a prompt engineer. Maybe that's a little bit technical. But where do you see some of the challenges? You're talking about the challenge like, I can't look at the source code because I don't know what it is anymore. But what about even just higher abstraction, which is you don't really understand logic. Like, you're not really, like, you were talking more about a developer using it, but what if you're a non-technical person? You say, but I'm a developer now because I use this code, you know, support AI tool.
Well, you know, if you get into reading about AI and machine learning more specifically, you understand that LLMs aren't reasoning, they're not smart, they're just using math to guess at what the right answer is. It's curve fitting, but it's really powerful. You know, curve fitting, I mean, Elon Musk just put together a supercomputer with 100,000 NVIDIA GPUs. I'm interested to see what that's going to do.
Be a lot of curves going on there.
But in terms of what you're talking about, I think the challenge is going to be your LLM is trained on data from everyone. Mm-hmm. And to really get an edge and really get the answers you're looking for, there should be some understanding of you as an individual. And so Ari and I were just chatting before we started this podcast about the concept of sort of a personal agent that sort of follows you around the internet. Of course, there's privacy concerns with that. But that aside for the moment, it learns what you're searching for, what you think are good answers. It learns about you as a person. And, you know, you were showing me a little bit of Hawk Search. And you said, what should I buy for a six-year-old?
Yeah.
So you can use that as part of a prompt, but you can also take that prompt to learn that that person is a parent and has a six-year-old.
Yeah.
And you start building more context for that as an individual. And if you can feed that into your Gen AI, you're going to get even better results. You know, I think, and it's not an original thought, I've read about this a lot, that part of the future for these AI agents is people interacting with the internet by proxy on both ends, on the consumer end and the producer end. And you know, you can create sort of unforeseen problems doing that. So for example, I've personally seen this recently. After my last role, I took a few months off, but I've recently started a job search again. And if you read anything about people looking for jobs right now, you'll hear repeatedly that ATS, these applicant tracking systems, are using AI to analyze resumes and sort of provide filters because there's so many people applying, they need to narrow down the pool. Yeah. But then you also have candidates that are applying using AI to customize a resume, write cover letters, and automatically apply. So you got AI agents sort of fighting each other and people getting kind of lost in the sauce there, and you know that'd be an interesting problem to try to solve. But I do think the benefits outweigh the problems with sort of personal AI agents. I'd be interested in how you know you can use that to improve, like you know, for example, a search experience. If it knows more about you, it can. If you bought a bunch of clothes that were all black, you like black clothes.
Totally.
It could boost, you know, those for just for you because
totally.
That's in your history.
And that's typically what we understand with segmentation and personalization, like, oh, you like black clothes versus other ones or what have you. But what if it's more like, I recognize that you're more of a technical person, so the response I give in the Gen AI is going to be of a more technical nature versus, you know, you're an inexperienced person or what have you. So we'll see this here when we start getting into what we call smart response. That's where you take the results that came back from whatever your search is, the six-year-old or what have you, and then say, okay, but formulate an answer as if you're a person. Like, this is the artificial intelligence part. So I think what I'd like to do, too, as I go through this, Jim, is also to highlight what aspects are the developers doing and what aspects are the non-technical people doing. So let's just take a look at that. So here, this is just our demo site. It's our outdoor demo. So it has a number of products for hiking, camping, and things like that. This is a very typical implementation for Hawk Search because we work very closely with e-commerce tools, product catalogs, etc. And I want to be able to let the merchandisers, the people who care about what are we selling, how are we organizing our information, they have a back-end interface where they can do things like, what kind of facets do I want to select here, and what's the order? I want to have category first, then brand. Oh, maybe I'll switch it around. I want brand to be before category. Those are all things that a non-technical person could do. And when we grew up originally in the platform, things were quite straightforward. So if I do something as straightforward as just start doing a keyword search, we know it comes back with what's called autocomplete. It finds some popular searches, what have you.
It's funny, we've trained people to adapt themselves to how computers work, and I think we're seeing that
100%.
Reverse now.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Oh, totally. Yeah. That is absolutely the case. And then what you're seeing here is a couple of things. First of all, you're seeing a little campaign here. Once again, that's driven by a merchandiser. So the developer didn't say like, oh, if someone's searching for hiking shoes, I want to show this. These are also what are called pinned. So I always want these to appear on the top. If a certain result comes by, that's why I have this little star here. So the point is the developer kind of laid out the basic framework of this page, but it was a non-technical person that had some of the input on, oh, I have a campaign that shows that banner on the top. I want to organize my facets on the left-hand side. And that gets kind of interesting. Now, when I get more into the AI aspect of this, and I switch this, we were kind of joking or talking about before, which is what should I get for my 6-year-old? You can see, number one, the autocomplete went away. This is keyword is like, what, and four, and I'm getting a little bit confused. There are some ways that you can kind of get around this, but it doesn't really understand the question. In this case, you need a concept search. We need to use the LLM. We need to make a
and
AI
understand
search.
Understand what you mean by that, because it's trained on lots of data that's like that and can guess what the right answer is. And that's really powerful.
Exactly. It understands kids. A 6-year-old is still a kid. If I said my 15-year-old, it's like, not really a kid anymore. Like, it understands those things because this is doing what we call a concept search. It's basically doing a vector search. We create embeddings for all these descriptions, etc., and it understands the concept of what you're asking for. Now, all of the other things we were saying before, like, oh, the order of the facets and everything else still remains the same. The system is just smarter in finding a result. Now we get to the fun part. So this is good. This is helpful. You just made my results more relevant. You're helping me get this result. By the way, I could ask this question in Spanish. It would return the same result because it's using a sentence transformer. So it understands all that. I could also upload a picture. I'm not going to bore you with those details, but it'll find the picture, find the match, etc. But where it starts to get more interesting is, why don't we go to the next level? Not only are we giving you some good search results, I can start building an experience. We call it a smart response, where not only do we get the search results, but I can start talking to you the way that someone in a store would talk to you.
So it's reasoning of how it came up with the results.
Exactly. And it's creating what Gartner would refer to and others as more like, it's more of a conversation. Like, I'm actually responding to you, not the way that we used to work, which is keywords, and then I give you results. It's more like how humans interact. This is where the artificial intelligence part comes back. So if I do that same question, what should I get for my 6-year-old, it's still doing the first search. Like, make no mistake, we have a lot of different products. They're not all for 6-year-olds. But when I get that back, now I can start having a conversation. We call this smart response. Now, here's where I'd be curious to get your thoughts. Because, look, some of it is still technical. You have to make an API call. There is an LLM we're hitting in the back end. But this is where it comes to the prompt.
Yeah.
Because you are saying, am I a mother, or am I a teacher, or am I maybe even a father? Maybe the way you talk to each one of those segments is different. And the prompt, that's English. Like, you don't, it's not if else. It's just like, pretend you are an authoritative person, or the person that you're responding to is over 60 and is less familiar with technology, or the person who is doing this request has been hiking for 10 years.
Sure.
You know, so where, how could you hand off like that part, the prompt, if you will, to the non-technical person so that now this is not just like, oh, developers know how to do all this magic to basically populate this middle section here and expose that to a non-technical person so that they can, the same way that they were saying, like, oh, I want to add a merchandising rule, but I want to change these prompts. Where do these two worlds come together?
I'll give you a couple thoughts on the fly here. The first one is a little bit of a meta thought of recording prompts and results that are similar to your prompts and results. So when you get this response recommended product for your 6-year-old with the explanation, you could give them suggestions where to go from there.
Yeah.
Say, do you want to see, you know, based on guessing what the next prompt might be, using an LLM to guess the prompt.
Right, and it can become very conversational where it's like, okay, what can I get for my 6-year-old? Here are some suggestions. Is your 6-year-old a boy or a girl?
Right.
Yeah. And now you're engaging, just like a real salesperson.
Sure.
A real salesperson is going to ask you if it's a boy or a girl, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to anticipate what you need.
Yeah.
And so if you're having Gen AI guess the next prompt or a few different versions of it, and you're recording that, it's learning. It's getting better at making suggestions.
The LLM needs to maintain that context and begin a dialogue and then refine or or expand the prompt to include the context.
And then you can do, I think, one even better with that is you talked about merchandisers. So imagine empowering your merchandisers to define their 3 or 5 or 10 personas they're targeting.
Exactly.
And actually train a different model for each persona, or you know, something along those lines. I don't have the thought fully formed. But if you start training them more specifically for your target demographics, you may start even seeing better results there too.
Yeah. Yep. So the way that we've been looking at, I'll show you in a second, is it's kind of that same a little bit of tension that we had even back in the Fatwire days to an extent. So if the one advantage with a webmaster was they totally knew how to lay out every page. If you want, oh, that indented or bold or the bullets, I want the bolt to be a certain color, like they totally know how to do it and it's never going to be a problem. If you expose it to the end user and say, no, you guys do it, then maybe they screwed up. They hit publish, and now the web page has the wrong color, or it wasn't laid out right, what have you. So we're trying to get to the same part here, because the prompt information that we were just saying before is inside the code here. So the prompt is built into the underlying code. So if someone said, for example, hey, I want to change that prompt, you would have to go to GitHub or whatever your code deployment is to change the prompt information. So now you're seeing our roadmap and where we're trying to go with this. We are exposing inside of a tool called E360. This is a Bridgeline product where it kind of bubbles up a lot of high-level information across the Bridgeline products, HawkSearch, WooRank, others. And what we're doing is creating this feature called the GenAI Bridge. And what the GenAI Bridge says, oh, do you want to create what we're calling an agent? And in that case, I, as a non-technical, let's say a prompt engineer, can put in, this is the prompt. You were saying I'm going to have 10 examples. One is, it's a single mother that's never gone hiking before. Number two, it's a team captain who hikes for 10 years and knows everything about hiking. That goes into the prompt. The data that came back from the initial search is always the same. It's going to be those products for a six-year-old. But I want to make sure for the mother, maybe I describe it a certain way. For the team captain, I describe it another way, although he probably wouldn't be searching for a six-year-old. But the point is, each one of those personas is really captured as a prompt. And then we're wrapping it around an agent, because there could be other details, and some of these do get a little bit specific here, like which model do you want to use, and number of tokens. So some of this gets a little bit in the weeds, which is why we're trying to figure out, like, where do we not let people do stuff? Like, the developer could always say, hey, you're the one who picked that model, or you are the one who wrote, you know, that prompt or what have you. But we want to find a balance where the developers, you know, can control a lot of the details, but it's the merchandisers who can say, whoa, that's the wrong prompt. In that scenario, I want to have a different prompt. I want to be able to communicate that smart response a different way.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you have a direct control over temperature in the model here. And Ari and I were chatting about this before, that, you know, it might be beneficial to, I don't know, be a preprocessor, but part of the system to understand if your search query is deterministic or if it's vague. So if you're searching for hiking boots, your first example, that's very deterministic.
Totally.
And it's going to match your keywords, and keyword search may be better at that point. But if you say, you know, I want to go hiking, what do I need to bring?
Yeah, exactly.
That's vague.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, your AI is going to give you you know, a better response than your keyword search in that case. But it'd be interesting to play around with the concept of temperature, but in more fine grain for your personas, where you're kind of increasing or decreasing the weights of certain parameters based on your merchandising aims, not just overall temperature up or down.
Yeah.
You know, we've been using essentially a philosophy of being inclusive with our with the merchandising team, as opposed to replacing them. So we're creating agents that will expand and work with the merchandising team, so that the merchandising team can still have their own objectives of promoting certain products above other ones, changing the placement of certain banners, pinning products, boosting and bearing, and so forth. and they can make those decisions in their own context, maybe just from a water cooler conversation, and then tune the different AI agents inside of HawkSearch to merchandise based on their own goals. And this is different than what everybody else in product discovery and site search is doing, where every single other person, once you enable AI, merchandising goes away. And they are following this philosophy where they think that their AI agents will understand the context better than the merchandiser
and
himself.
I think that's a mistake.
Yeah,
I do too. It's a big mistake. There's not enough context.
It only has the context that you provide.
That's right.
And you know, to bring it away from search for 1 second, I had a parallel train of thought regarding, you know, my own career as an engineering manager. Is that sort of becoming less and less important? I actually think it's becoming more important as we're using AI more and more to write code, to write tests, to write full software packages. You know, as we were just saying, that only has the context you give it. It doesn't necessarily yet think about things like costs and regulatory compliance,
right,
and things like that. You have to tell it to do those things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And engineers, really good engineers might do that, but typically that's the role of an engineering manager or director or whatnot.
Yes. And especially more nimble companies, even large nimble companies like Facebook or small nimble companies like all the technology companies, you have to make certain bets. And the stakeholders in that company are going to make those bets on their imperfect information. And if you can't direct your AI code generation to take that context, which it's just a bet. You're not going to reason through that. It's just that someone's got to try this. That's capitalism, and one person's going to win, and somebody else is going to go work for the guy that won.
Especially if you start getting into counterintuitive practices in merchandising, like loss leaders. If you provide context of performance of your sales, you know, how much revenue, how much profit am I making, all these things, but you're not getting enough first-time customers, you may want to use a loss leader. But that's not something that Gen AI is going to come up with easily yet.
Yeah, yeah. And not the way that transformer neural networks work, because they're going to only curve fit towards existing training sets. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, even if you yank the temperature way down and create a lot of variability into your response, you're not going to get that same kind. It's a limitation of that model.
Right.
I mean, there's other neural networks.
It's not creative. People are creative.
That's right.
And I think it's a big area. It's off topic, but you know, the whole controversy around attribution and provenance for creatively generated AI images, art, etc. And you know, there was just a big falling out in, I forget the name of the organization, it's a writers organization, where they adopted an official policy that they're going to embrace AI.
Okay.
And a lot of writers really objected to that because they feel it's plagiarism. Same thing with artists, you know. So I think provenance in AI is going to be important when you're doing something, you know, nominally creative with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very tricky, right? I mean, every note has been played.
Yes.
So does that mean that there's no new music?
And musicians borrow and steal from each other all the time, and they have for the history of music. But, you know, I thought of an analogy about music regarding provenance and attribution earlier. Is you get to the point where artists are sampling pieces of other people's music, and that's really sort of the dividing line between, you know, creatively being influenced by somebody and actually just using their work.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. And I think we need to figure that out with Gen AI.
Yeah. Well, the DJs have been doing it for a while, spinning records and mixing things, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they didn't write a single note, the whole thing, but they
put
it together. Right? It was creative, regardless. Yeah.
Yeah.
So creative comes from different angles. It's a different thing. Let's see some more about some more stuff inside of the product here that I want them to see more.
So the next part then is, this is great, and we see a way to respond. So this real estate here could be fit with different types of responses. So the other one would be more conversational. I don't want to just give you this answer because this is not the same as a search result because it really broke it down for me and made a specific recommendation and maybe had that prompt information you were talking about. But what if I want to like ask a question back, right? So this didn't really ask me a question once I said, what should I get for my six-year-old? So in that scenario, you really need something that's a conversational search.
Yeah, see that? You're hitting it. John's on it. You did it. There we go.
Yeah. So this is pointing to the same outdoor demo. This is the one that we typically use. And this user experience I know is separate. It's obviously not inside of there because we build these out in components in what we call Rapid UI. So guess what our developers are working on and why you may be hearing some pings on my Slack as we're on this call is that we're in really close to pushing out all of these components within. But the process is the same. So if I ask that same question, what should I get for my six-year-old? This is the same thing that I filled out in that search bar above. It's doing the same process. So it's going to think about it for a second, and it come back, but the prompt is different. The prompt before was just, hey, pick one of these results and kind of describe it a little bit, and we were saying before, and this is a mother, or whatever it may be. That was the prompt. In this prompt, it's different. It's saying, number one, I need to maintain the thread of these questions because when I come back, it needs to remember, oh yeah, we're talking about a six-year-old,
sure.
Right? Because it's saying right here, what kind of items are you interested in? Clothing, outdoor gear, what have you. If I just respond with outdoor gear and it doesn't remember we're talking about a six-year-old, it might just start giving me adult stuff or whatever. So it's maintaining the thread. So conceptually, it's the same. I'm just asking the Gen AI to do this, and
you're just using the prompt history with retrieval augmented generation to improve the results.
Exactly. So it's a different type of smart response. I can have a smart response to summarize results. I can have a smart response to have a conversational search. It's basically a real estate on the page that lets me have different types of dialogues. So if I do say, though, outdoor gear, as I said, it remembers. It knows, you know, what you were, what's the context, what were the previous conversations, et cetera. So remember, it knows. It's the six-year-old, as we were saying before, and starts to make a suggestion, like the other
one.
It would
be really interesting,
yeah.
Is doing more Gen AI on the results. So the example that just popped into my head is, you know, fashion or home decor.
Yeah.
Imagine you upload a picture of your kitchen.
Yeah.
And you're shopping for a new spice rack.
Yeah.
Or a new knife block, whatever it
yeah.
is, and you can click on something, it can show it to you in your kitchen, or
yeah.
fashion,
like
you're searching for a hat, and you upload a picture yourself, and even has a history of what you bought, and it can dress you in those outfits.
Yeah.
I bet you that would improve conversion.
Yeah, oh totally, which is our main goal in all these.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just have a variation on the same theme, so this is just... Now we're just starting to have fun here. So now it's the same thing as we were looking at before, except now I'm asking a question. So what should I get for my six-year-old? It understood my voice request. It did Gen AI to convert it to text. Then it submitted the text. It got the results in the back end. And now it's actually saying the response here. So now you can have just more and more of these front experiences. These are partners can build these out, and the services team can build these out. We can have multiple ones, but in the end, it's still going to be the combination of the prompts in the back, as we were seeing inside of E360, getting much more creative, and these are just additional experiences that all fit within this user experience underneath the search bar.
Yeah, I think that conversational component becomes especially important in sort of a hands-free Alexa-style shopping experience where you're just speaking.
Yeah, yeah. These are all just various options that you can turn on or turn off.
Mm-hmm.
And hide. You know, in some cases, you don't want to see those details. Like, I just really want to go back. When we've been thinking about this, and I don't know, Jim, if you have a feeling about it, that, well, do we even need the results here? Like, why even show our results? We're having this little dialogue here. My guess is you always want the search results.
Right, because if you can skip ahead
yeah.
in the process, if the person
yeah.
sees what they're looking for, you don't have to
yeah.
have them complete the conversation. So I think showing the results
yeah.
is a good idea.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you have this in the dashboard along with WooRank. One of the other topics we were talking about is the, you know, the future of SEO, and if people are indeed interacting via agents, you know, by proxy, are you going to be optimizing your website for search engines, or are you going to be optimizing for LLMs?
Yeah. Just to show you, are you a little familiar with WooRank? I can't remember.
Sure.
WooRank? Okay.
Yeah.
So this is the latest thing we've been doing here. And this is where it gets a little bit interesting, too. So, and this also is built a little bit on the model of TruePresence, if you remember that. So now what we're doing is we're feeding a bunch of URLs to WooRank and say, give me the page breakdown here. What's their score? What's their WooRank score? What technologies are they using? So what we're showing here is, okay, here's a list inside of whatever that it may be. You're an agency and I have 500 sites I manage. You're a consultant and you want to know in this industry, you know, what technologies do people use? But what we're adding to this is smart response, because most of the time it's just going to be stuff like, and these are some internal people here, let me see all the ones that Matt's working on. So that's just some metadata that's inside the system. But imagine if we could include smart response here too. And it'll be the first example where the smart response is coming off WooRank data, because all of the technologies, whether they use analytics or not, whether they have a robots file, the SSL secured, all the stuff that WooRank comes back with, we can have a nice smart response that says, oh, okay, for that state or for this type of business or whatever it is, tell me something. Read through the responses rather than me have to go through each one of these and see what the details are. I can actually have the smart response just give me a nice breakdown of what I may be looking for. And it could be a conversation. Say, what do you want to know? What can I tell you? And it's not just, this is a nice index and I really like the way you can search for this stuff, but would be even better is I could have a conversation with this index. And it's WooRank data, not Hawk Search data.
One of the really interesting things I saw, and I'll explain why this is relevant recently, is there was a piece of Gen AI software where someone was playing the video game Doom. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And there was no software, there was no engine. It was just drawing the next frame in real time. And it looked like they were playing Doom.
The LLM was?
Yeah.
Interesting. So it was curve fitting a typical Doom
right.
It
was
session.
Fed a bunch of Doom sessions,
and it just
guessed with the next frame. It wasn't perfect, but it kind of blew my mind. You know, what do you think about the future of websites? Are there going to be engineers writing websites, or are you just going to be talking to an LLM that just generates a page?
Wow, that's a really interesting idea, right? Yeah, there is no website. There's just...
And then how do you provide merchandising tools for a website that doesn't exist, that's just an LLM, that's just generating the response on the fly.
Agents. You're basically creating agents all the time.
Yeah, so it's agents talking to agents.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that
have your agent call my agent.
Than we expect. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, at some point there is a human machine interface, and it might not be between you and the store. It could be just between you and your agent, and then that agent has its agental interface with the store's agent, and then your personal agent needs to be able to present results for you, and it's probably not individual store results. It's like, okay, we've got a big camping trip coming up, here's your itinerary, here's the airplane information, here's your packing list. And
imagine now connecting that to manufacturing supply chain, where you're not going to say we're going to make 10,000 units of a mouse this quarter. We're going to make it based on guess of how many mice we're going to sell.
Yeah, right?
So yeah.
And then feed that information down the supply chain, and you know, you're going to have, theoretically, you could have way more efficient manufacturing supply chain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think Amazon is already doing something like that with knowing where to warehouse goods.
Oh,
that
sure.
They want it as close as possible to where they believe it's going to be bought.
Yeah.
And
right,
be interesting also to
<It's awesome. laughs> Yeah.
Be interesting also to have Hawk Search, you know, this is probably a little bit further out, and you know, start anticipating merchandising based on, you know, things other than persona. You know, everyone knows that there are seasons for certain types of retail goods.
Yeah.
And have it start saying, okay, we know based on history that we're about to start ramping up on pumpkin spice everything.
Yeah, totally, you can do that because we
already have, from a merchandising perspective, the ability to promote. You're selling jackets, and it's December in Minnesota. You're going to promote a, you know, a different jacket than if it's summertime in Florida. And your merchandising agent, in terms of promotions, boosting, and so
forth,
you're better at that. And still, I still subscribe to the tailored AI, is what we've been calling it, approach of allowing the merchandiser, the human merchandiser, to continue to interact with and control, direct that agent. Agents will get smarter and smarter over time, but we're decades away from people completely just checking up. Only decades.
This is part of our roadmap.
It's going fast.
Right now, the agents are focused on the site visitor, and that's important because they're the ones buying things. But then we're going to point the agents internally to help the merchandisers. So let me look at all your analytics. Oh, you're getting this keyword that doesn't have good search results. You know, you should add whatever, you know, change some of your settings. So we have APIs that have access to all this data. So rather than just use the API to drive our analytics front end, just have the agent just periodically go through stuff and see, is anything off here? Oh, if it is, send an alert or whatever it may be.
Yeah, some of the more amazing things I've been reading about are use of AI in medical research. And the reason I think it's good at that, and you know, this may seem obvious, is that machines are really good at pattern recognition, way better than people because there's so much data. And I think if you take that concept and apply it to your merchandising, AI will say, hey, to the merchandiser, I recognize this pattern in sales, whether it's good or bad, or you know, conversions, whether it's good or bad. And then that person has that information, they can take action based on that insight that they wouldn't necessarily have had because it's just too much data to recognize the pattern.
I got a great example. So maybe a year ago or so, McDonald's shifted to they sell breakfast all day long. Why did it take them 40 years to figure that out? Finally, an LLM told them, it's like, those hash browns sell all day.
Totally. Yeah, data's king.
But it will come up to some of the points you were saying, especially in healthcare. Let's just say you had a life-threatening issue, but no one knows what it is. It's a mystery. And you had two options. You could only pick one. One is your classic kind of doctor, gray hair, the white lab coat, been practicing for a long time and says, I think it's this. Or the data scientist has said, look, I looked at a trillion records and who knows where, and I think it's this. And they're two different things, and you can only pick one. Which one would you pick?
That's hard to say.
But we're getting research, to that point.
Right. The research I was talking about is more of, you know, analyzing protein structures.
Yeah.
I mean, there's near infinite possibilities, and people just can't handle that. You know, you can focus on one area and maybe be creative.
Yeah.
Machines just run all day. They don't get tired. They don't lose focus.
Right.
They take a ton of energy, and we were talking about that
too.
Yeah. But they can recognize patterns very easily on very large data sets.
Yeah, and high-dimensional data sets.
So high-dimensional, very high.
Multi-dimensional,
So it's really interesting what you guys are doing here with HawkSearch and with HawkRank, and you know, curious to come back in a little while and see how far you've gotten.
Totally.
And to your point, customer driven. So we've got big customers out there like HP, and we've got smaller customers as well that are pushing us, giving us real world use cases. They've got serious demands in terms of growing their online revenue, and that's what's driving all this.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Great. Hey, well, thanks for having me. It's great to see you both.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Okay.
And looking forward to see where you go.
Yeah, totally.
Jim, I wanted to give you the opportunity to let others know where they can find you and connect with you.
Sure. The easiest way to find me is on LinkedIn. It's linkedin.com/in/JimVoss, JIMVOSS.
Perfect. We'll link those in the show notes for anybody who's interested. But thank you, guys. This was another great episode per usual. And we'll see you all next time. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.